March 18th, 2005. I am Michael Rodriguez, here to interview Patricia Clark for the Michigan Writers Series. Welcome to Michigan State University.
Thank you very much.
You're reading tonight, I suppose you're reading probably mainly from the new book.
I am.
A brand new book from Michigan State University Press. Actually, I think this is probably, it came out this week.
It did.
Yeah.
It did.
Yeah.
I just saw my copies on Wednesday, and I think that's when you said you got yours.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's just like so fresh. The yeah. ink is still drying.
Yeah. But you've spent time with a lot of these poems. I mean, a lot of the work seems, one of the things I'm working up to is talking about geography.
Mm-hmm.
And you've lived all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, all over. You've lived in Europe, too.
Oh, no. No. I mean, I've traveled in Europe, but I haven't lived in Europe.
Okay.
I mean, other than a few weeks.
Just browsing through the book as I did, I noticed that many of the poems were about geographies other than Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And especially Washington, I believe.
Right.
Right.
My roots are in Washington State.
Right. So one of the standard questions I always ask, and because this is the Michigan Writers Series,
mm-hmm.
is about Michigan. And browsing through the book, I noticed two things stood out to me. One was all of the flora that is talked about
mm-hmm.
and named. And the other is water.
Mm-hmm.
Rivers, especially, which is an interesting topic for Michigan because Michigan is a water state, but it's not a water state like other. Like Washington is a great river state. I mean,
yeah.
it's some of the best rivers in the country, especially
yeah.
for fishing are in
yeah.
Washington State.
So
I just wonder, I didn't get it far enough to see that you do or don't talk about the Great Lakes, or about, there's a difference, the metaphor of moving water and rivers
yeah.
is much different.
Yeah,
than,
I'm not into lakes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I really, there's one poem that references Lake Superior.
I saw that, yeah.
But I don't think Lake Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Which you live not too far from.
Yeah, I mean, I live in Grand Rapids, but
yeah.
you're right. It's moving water
mm-hmm.
that's it more informs my work.
Well, the Great Lakes do move.
I know they
do.
The
water does move.
In fact, what was the study on how long it takes to flush through the water? But at any rate, I'm sure that's coming, but river water seems to have a particular metaphoric kind of play that works better, even though the lake water does really move. And at Lake Michigan, even Lake Superior, there's a kind of surf at times.
Absolutely. And there's an undertow, and there's
yeah.
there are currents to
yeah.
those.
Yeah, I'm not knocking. I'm not knocking the lakes. But
I'm not trying to defend them.
No,
they stand,
don't defend them.
They stand for themselves pretty well.
They do. They
yeah.
do. They don't need our help.
But, I was just curious about geography in general. You spent a lot of time, and you've lived in Washington. You at least went to school in Montana and in Texas.
Right.
How do you find the geography of Michigan in terms of, as a muse?
I think the geography of Michigan has been a good muse, but I can't say it's in the poems exactly that much beyond the river. I think when I first was here, like when I was first in Texas, I would get on the freeway and I'd come around a bend in the freeway and I'd think, oh, I'm going to see Mount Rainier here in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was never, it was kind of a shock of like, where's the tall thing in the distance?
They're the chimneys of the factories.
Right. So I've gotten used to that. And I think the landscape is quite beautiful. And as you go north and it gets a bit more rolling, it's quite lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mind the flat.
Mm-hmm.
I do miss the mountains, this mm-hmm. kind of spiritual presence of mm-hmm. the mountains. But I write here, so I think I'm the muse of the landscape is working, especially the river.
How about the language of the people? Do you find that is different in terms of capturing that?
I don't find it different. I don't hear anything different in my head that's a Michigan kind of lingo versus Washington or Texas. I mean, In fact, I don't really think I've written about Texas or Montana much. It's really it's really kind of the landscape that you're imprinted on when you're born, kind of like a duckling sees the first thing and thinks that's my mother, and if it's a chair, you know, it's kind of mixed up.
Well, that goes along with the themes of at least what I saw, what I was able to glean from what I read was their poems about coming of experience, or at least somewhat. So it's natural to write about your origins.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
And you know, you're just going to either write about those origins or struggle against those origins, but they're there to react for and against.
You've traveled a lot too. How do you find travel important for writing? I don't know how else to say that. Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think, well, a couple of things. You can't really write when you travel because it's kind of hard to do that. You might take some notes or you look at things. But I think what's kind of neat is it gives you some distance. Maybe you are able to reflect in a different way when you're far from the landscape that you know. So something does change in you. It's really kind of hard to quantify what that is.
You become a different person too when
you
you're traveling.
You do.
You're out of your routine.
You are.
Your routine.
And I don't find that. I mean, I have to say, I'm a creature of habit. So some of it is a little uncomfortable, and then some of it is very exhilarating to say goodbye to that that you know, ordinary husk of the person who goes through all that ordinary. You know, kind of routine.
Right.
I'd say go travel, you know, for people, writers. They should go.
Just to be able to look at yourself, at your normal self, sort of standing back away from yourself and looking at
I think that's fabulous. Yeah. And, you know, speaking of language, you really do run into some different languages then. You know, I was in Ireland a bit, a couple of summers, and you do hear some really cool talk. And you also hear people comment on what you think is just your regular talk.
Yeah.
And they comment on that, and that you're kind of a Yank, and you're this. And it's quite cool how that happens. So I think those collisions are important for writing. And I'd say, I mean, I wish I'd gone when I was 18, but I didn't have the means really to go then.
When I was this is talking about me for a second. But
sure.
When I was in Ireland, the first thing that struck me about about what they say is they say the word reckon all the time. I reckon I'll go to the store. At least the people that I hung out with did.
That was not what I noticed.
Appalachian,
it is.
American
That's kind
thing.
Of Tennessee. Or even Texas.
Yeah.
Well, I heard grand a lot. You know, that's really grand.
Right.
Or people saying, well, that's kind of dodgy. And I'd think, dodgy?
Yeah, yeah.
So I started using that word a lot until they told me that was... I was overusing it. They reined me in. But it's just fascinating, and I think they've got different words for things, you know, a lane instead of an alley, or you know, some of it doesn't sound significant when you name some of the words. But in total, I think it becomes more significant. And I think they're pretty well spoken. At least that was my impression in Ireland. The people use words carefully. They're pretty verbal. They're pretty talkative. They like to talk. And they know America pretty well. They kind of put us to shame knowing all our politics. And
there's more Irish living in America than there are in Ireland.
Yeah. But they're going back, some of them, to Ireland. But
yeah.
It was very stimulating. And I guess I'd say if things stimulate a writer, maybe those things are good, you know, that you won't write at the time, but you'll come back with new energy, new ways of looking at your world. What else can you hope for?
One question I usually ask people is about, because most of the Michigan writers that come here are teachers as well. So one of the natural questions is about teaching. You've been teaching for a while now. How does this inform or... does it make writing harder, I suppose, or does it inform writing somehow?
Well, it sure informs it. Does it make it harder? Yeah, yes and no. I mean, does it help you? Yes, it does help you too.
What does it do for you?
Well, for one thing, I hear myself after a while reminding my students about things, and then I remind myself by reminding mm-hmm. them, you know, make your language fresh, mm-hmm. be interesting as a writer. Mm-hmm. And those lessons are great lessons to even remember yourself. So if I've gotten a little bit lazy with my work, I say, you know, crank it up a little bit, yeah. you know, jazz it up. So is it hard? Well, you know, working for a living every time is hard. If I were independently yeah. wealthy, you know, I guess that would be nice. I don't really think so, but...
Do you think you'd be a better writer or a different writer if you were independently wealthy?
Different, I don't think, I can't say better. I mean, yeah, you'd be different somehow, but I guess maybe I'm flattering myself to think I'd like to be connected with the world of work anyway. Yeah. That sounds so romantic about work. Really, I'd love to retire, but no. It really keeps you in the world. It keeps reminding me, too, that for a lot of people, poetry is not essential, and mm-hmm. reading is not essential. Mm-hmm. And then you realize, yeah. as a writer, you need to work hard to reach out to people, people who might not gravitate toward. I mean, boy, we need an audience. I mean, we're never going to have huge, huge audiences for poetry, mm-hmm. I guess, but we need to keep people interested. And I think people are. I'm mm-hmm. not trying to say it's dismal.
This is actually a good segue into probably my last question, because we're kind of running out of time. Mm-hmm. But you do have huge audiences for Poetry Night.
And mm-hmm. Have you come over?
I was invited once a couple years ago.
You gotta come again.
I was on Diana Domokoski's Coattails.
Okay. So for Billy Collins and Robert Harrison.
No, that was Jim Harrison. And Galway Canal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. An extremely impressive event. And just the number of people that come,
yep.
in the setup they roll out for the events,
yep.
this doesn't happen in many places.
Yeah, I'm pretty proud of that.
Even in very Ivy League-rich sort of places.
Yeah. I'm pretty proud of it.
Can you talk about that? Where does this come? Where did it come from? It has a long tradition.
Yeah, Grand Valley in the early to mid-70s, apparently, this is well before my time, had some poetry festivals. A guy named... I'm not going to remember his name. It'll come to me. But he started these poetry festivals, and kind of word went out across the U.S., and people came in the summer. And they had all the best people. They had Galway Canal and James Wright and Robert Bly and Robert Creeley and on and on and on. And I guess they were just out in the fields in Allendale. So, and then that man went away, and that kind of died away. But I think there's an interest here in poetry, as there is in quite a few of the areas of our country. Then a couple of times I suggested, like I asked that if we could have Robert Pinsky when he was the poet laureate, and our president, Don Lubbers, said sure. And so we had Robert Pinsky come. And I think we began to see that, because we had a standing room only crowd for Pinsky, that we could get people there. Mm-hmm. Then really the president's office came to me and said, let's do a big poetry night with multiple poet laureates. And I was kind of taken aback, and I thought, well, they're kidding. I mean, it's going to be expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So I did some research and told them what it would cost, and they, to my surprise, said, let's go ahead.
There's no grant money involved.
No. But, you know, and then that first time we had over 650 people, yeah. on a Friday night.
Yeah.
And I think the president, our new president, Mark Murray, was just blown away. Yeah. I was blown away. And we had such fun. Yeah. I mean, it was delightful. My students said to me they had no idea that many people were interested mm-hmm. in poetry. So we've continued. And now I think we've kind of shoehorned our way in to being a permanent part of our fall art celebration.
Yeah.
And I love it.
That's
so
fantastic.
I hope we continue for 10 years, mm-hmm. 15 years, mm-hmm. 20. And I, you know, they really want to make it a quality night, like you say. Mm-hmm. And I think it's been. And the poets have been so impressed.
Who was it this year?
Well, it will be October 12 of 95.
Oh, who was it last year?
Last year was Charles Wright and Rita Dove.
Rita Dove.
And again, we had, I'd say, 350, 375 in terms of the audience. I forget the count, but it was great.
Do you get to pick the writers?
Yeah, I get to pick the writers. And so far I've, you know, I generally talk with people in my department and kind of get a kind of a feel for who would be good. But I think we're thinking two things, both high quality, like Pulitzer Prize winning. Mm-hmm. Someday we'll do a Nobel Prize winner, but Pulitzer Prize kind of quality, and then with popular appeal too. I mean, not that... And we've had that, so that people in the community have really turned out, and it's been very gratifying.
Yeah, it's a very impressive
Please
event.
Come to the one in October 12th.
If I get notice,
you don't
need a notice.
You don't need a notice. Okay. It's just open.
Yeah. Yeah.
So please come.
Okay, I will. That's great. Anything else?
No.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Michael.
Thanks
I appreciate it.
Thanks for doing this.
Okay.
It's great.